You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, welcome back, queers.
This is Season 3, Episode 10, An Interview with Sis.
Thesis on Joan is a podcast dedicated to amplifying voices from the LGBTQ plus community in the New York performing arts scene and examining the industry from a queer perspective. Join us as we sit down with groundbreaking theater folks, both on stage and behind the curtain. For many queers, theater has been an escape, and this podcast looks to have open conversations on where we've come from and where we're headed as a community while queering the canon along the way.
Hello, queers. We are so excited to bring you our third interview of the fall. Today, we are talking to Sis. And just to note that while we're having our interview, a friend of Sis is setting up a table in the background. So you might hear a little construction noise. And also, at one point, the friend makes a guest interjection. So that's what's happening there. Sis is an artist, activist, and sister to the people. Being from Houston, Texas, Sis has always dreamt big. With a mission in life of franchising the disenfranchised, she loves changing the narrative. From organizing protests to performing across America, Sis does it all. Other TV credits include Pose and The Last OG. To learn more about Sis, you can follow her on Instagram and Twitter at You Can Call Me Sis, and check out her organizations, The Next Generation Project and The Open House Project. You can also catch her as Ado Annie across America in the Broadway National Tour of Oklahoma. So when we talked to Sis, she was just wrapping up the tour. So we'll hear more about that now.
All right. Well, welcome to the podcast, Sis. I'm not lying. We've been talking about wanting to have you on the podcast for, I think, like the whole time we've had this show. So like the last 3 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we're so thrilled you're here today. And we always like to start with having our guests share their names, pronouns, and anything else you want to share with us on how you identify.
My name is Sis, and everything is in the title.
It is in the title.
I don't like say, I like, I'm like, it is like everything is in the title. Like, literally, this is, look, y'all gotta let me know how much I can go off and stay on track.
Yeah, do what you
want. As much as you want.
Well, it's just like, doing Oklahoma and like, just like the year, and like, also like, I Googled myself, and I'll never do it again after this. But like, somebody was like, enough people have Googled, is Sis a man? And like, it's like now permanently in my like Google search. And my thing is like, now tell me what bitch you know named Sis is a man. You know what I mean? Like, imagine a bitch named Sis being a man. And so like, but also just like when people ask my pronouns or just like generally, and I know like people don't, I can't expect everybody to like know of me or whatever, and I don't. But, like, after a certain point, I'm just like, okay, let's use our brains, babe. You know what I mean? Like, I'm getting jaded. Yeah. I'm getting jaded.
You have every right to be.
No, that's real. Yeah.
And speaking of the Oklahoma tour, you're on this national tour. It's been almost a year now. And you are Ado Annie. And how has your character and performance of Ado Annie evolved over the last year that you've been on the tour?
I think that, you know, I've made so many discoveries, like, doing the tour this past year. I think there are a lot of discoveries I made. Like, last night, I think I've been doing this for a year, and we have 4 weeks left, and I finally understood Ado Annie's plight from beginning to end. And I think, like, even in All or Nothing, I didn't really... I never really connected All or Nothing to Can't Say No, but I think you have to do it, especially with those Golden Age musicals, you have to, like, really re-clarify the character for yourself, because these people were written, even though, like, Ado Annie is me to a T and so similar to me, like, she was written, you know, 80, 90 years ago. So, like, I finally connected my Can't Say No to All or Nothing, and, like, I, like, literally was just like, oh, hell yeah. Like, it felt good because I feel like I did my job. Like, as a performer performing this role, like, it all came together and I feel like I'm done. You know, I feel like, okay, So that was a cool moment. But yeah, there's a lot of just, you know, there's a lot that she's evolved because I've evolved as a person. I think a lot of my, like, just femininity and just, like, my understanding of myself as a woman and my understanding of myself as a human and how I relate to the world. And a lot of those clarities I had, you know, at the beginning, but she has evolved in my growing. And, you know, I got cast at 23. And I auditioned for this show. My first time auditioning for this production was the Broadway production when I was 21. And so, like, I auditioned for the show when I was 21. I got cast at 23. And, you know, and now I'm 25. And so I think, like, that's been a long time. And, like, just purely with the song specifically, like, the song is what was my transitional anthem, because when I began to transition in college, and this was much, and socially, like, but in transitioning, when I say that, I don't want to mean, like, trans, being trans, like, transitioning as a human being, growing and evolving into the person that mm-hmm. I was supposed to be, or supposed to become. Can't Say No was, begin to be my anthem. We had did it when I was a junior, and I played Carnes. And I would always, no, that wasn't when Can't Say No came into my life. When Can't Say No came into my life, when we were doing, me and my friends went to our friend's high school to go see Oklahoma, and we were in college and we went to his high school to see Oklahoma. And I was like, this eats. Like, the girls be hating on Oklahoma, but this is fantastic. And it was this, the crazy thing about it was this high school production, and it was like 800 kids in it, like, and it was really good. And I'll never forget the girl who came out to play Ado Annie, and she sang King So No, and my mouth was on the floor. And she, reminded me, thank you. Yeah! Tyler literally took the back on. Yeah, she reminded me so much of Hannah. Like, she reminded me literally of Hannah Montana. Or Miley Cyrus is Hannah Montana, let me be very clear. And I think I identified with her so much in that, and just, like, it was, like, I think a spark. And so then, you know, we did it, and I love that song. And then I put it, the song in my rep, and I began to sing, and I ate it up every single time. And Can't Say No is what got me my agents. Like, it just really, like, did it for me, because, you know, I don't know if y'all went to musical theater school, but, you know, people who go to musical theater school, the whole, like, plight of going to musical theater school for those 4 years is, like, finding your song. And it's about finding the song that nobody else has ever heard. You're in the library, like, looking through those song books, like, dusting off these, you know, musicals that nobody has ever heard from. I remember my first cabaret song, and it was Clap Your Hands from OK the Musical. And it was like, I was like, oh yeah, I'm the baddest bitch, because I found this song. But I'm going off. Right. So when you heard a bitch like me sing it, the girls are gone. Yep. But anyways, I don't know where I went with all that. But anyway, So then I went to, this was one of my first New York auditions that I, like, waited outside for, and I, like, wore these overalls, and I was like, yeah, like, I'm gonna go to this audition. And I'll never forget, it was Kelsey, it was Destiny, and it was the first time I had ever auditioned in New York for a black woman, and I was like, oh, and, like, I waited, and I got seen, and I went in there and sang Can't Say No, and girl, that was a mess. It wasn't bad, it was just like, what are you doing? And that was in, I think that was beginning of 2018 to 2019, and then something got in my eye, oh my god. And then, so that happened, and then, you know, everything else happened, and I auditioned for the show again in 2020. At the beginning of 2020 is when I auditioned for the tour for the first time, and this was before the pandemic. So then I got a call back, and then auditioned for it within the pandemic, then didn't hear anything for a year, then went back to audition process. The role. So I have been with this song and this character for a long time. So I have evolved a lot. I think that Ado Annie was she brought me into my womanhood.
That is a long journey with the show. And like going from the first time you saw it at a high school. And this production is so different, right? I have to tell you, like, I had the like joy of seeing it in the first few weeks when it was on Broadway. And I went to a Sunday matinee, and it was clearly like the church group buses who did not realize this was going to be different. Lord. And I was like, this is my favorite part, was watching them watch the show. the Dream Ballet confused a lot of people, in a wonderful way. But our question is, how have audiences across the country been receiving it? And also, what do you think like this version of the show exposes in the original material?
It's been difficult. I will say that I think that America as a like place and as a community, and I say that air quote, people have expectations. Like, everybody has expectations for everything and everyone. And I think that's the crux, right? Like, that is our issue. In life, socially, like, everything we do is like, if you place an expectation on something or someone, you are going to fall short. You and the person. Because you must allow people to come to you as they are. And sometimes that is not off the cusp. That is after allowing them to show you who they are. You know what I mean? And I think this production of Oklahoma really flips everything on its head. And I think about this often during the show, seeing these, like, you know, older white folks who come to the show and they're upset and angry. And it's just like, y'all don't even like this shit. And that's the tea. It's like, it's not Daniel Fish's direction that y'all don't like. Y'all don't like this show. And because of execution and glitz and glamour and this and that, y'all liked it. But when it gets down to it, y'all don't like this show. And y'all don't like what it represents. Because also, you don't like yourselves. And we are putting a mirror, just like what Cabaret did. We're putting that mirror in your face for you to look back at yourself. And you're like, oh, shit. And you're gagged. But this is the world you created. You know? So, you know, I think that's the thing with Oklahoma. And I think that's why this reception of this piece is so weird, because this white man took this piece of theater that everybody loves, that especially like that group of folks loved, and flipped it on its head and showed them who they are and reared its little nasty head. And now the girls are gagged. And I think that's why this production ruffles feathers.
Period. As it should.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Whew. And going from like this really established production, right? Like one of the early musicals that put, plot to songs, and thinking about like a lot of the original work you've done. So you've created, directed, and starred in productions like Our Offering, which was a virtual production. And then you had a show at 54 Below called Cisgendered. Do you have a preference between doing original work or existing work?
I think that for me, I don't want to be a part of any machine, and I don't want to be a part of any game. And that's really hard in the grand scheme of like this industry and just the way the world works right now. And I think that I'm consistently trying to find innovative and evolving ways to be a part of this industry and to exist as a human being doing all the things that I want to do. And so that's what I'm kind of doing right now, because like for example, speaking on it is like, I love Legally Blonde, and like I think that there's no better time than right now for me to be Elle Woods. And like I want to produce a production, and I want to be in a production, right? But we haven't really, like, we've seen it before with like producers and, you know, stars, but like I want it to be good. Like, I don't want it. It's not going to be some, you know, thing. I want to create a piece of art and to create a piece of theater that's like special and like changes the American musical landscape or revives it in a way that we've never seen before. And like, you know, we've seen like these musicals with white people have black people in them and feature black people. But like, I want to transcend the text and transcend the story of like, of Elle Woods, right? And like make it so that, like, Black people can truly see themselves in this communal way. You know what I mean? And I think, like, that's the beauty of Elle Woods, is, like, she is this person that everybody can see themselves in, but people choose not to because she is this way. And we've seen it so long, you know, on this white woman, because, you know, back in the day, 20 years ago, when it was everybody, you know, was waiting their turn for representation, right? And waiting their turn for their stories to get told. And, like, you know, white women's stories, for the most part, have always been told, but, like, you know, the plight of feminism generally, right? And who leads that movement. And, I hope this is making sense. I'm trying to, like, pinpoint it, but basically what I'm saying is, like, I think there was a story finally created to transcend the plight of the white woman, of the American white woman, right? And, like, show that she can be nuanced. And so I feel like this is a perfect time to take a moment, if we're not going to do it, which we are. Like, there are a lot of stories being created by, like, Black trans women specifically, and definitely want to highlight and platform and amplify them first. But if we are in a time period now where we are showcasing pure existence and allowing people to just live and showcase the nuances and transcend the stories of Black trans women, like, I want to do that with Elle Woods, because I see myself in her. You know, she's this girl that people did not think was worth much. And because of who she was and where she came from, people, you know, talked down to her and people treated her like nothing. So she had to curate this life for her that began to fall in on herself. And then she was challenged and she met the challenge and she became the bitch that she always knew she was, but people doubted her. So she didn't know, you know, and I feel like that's me, you know, and I want to tell that story. And so I think that for me, that's beautiful, but also creating your own work is beautiful, but also creating your own work is very hard. And this is my thing that, like, pisses me off when it comes to this conversation, is, like, stop telling marginalized folks and folks with nuanced identities to create their own work, because, bitch, that is hard as fuck. And you can't do shit like that without a budget. You can't do shit like that without a platform. You can't do shit like that without a college fucking degree. Like, yeah, you can, but, like, you know, like, there are connections that have to be had and shit have to be in place for you to put something up. Like, thank you all so much for bringing up our offering, but, like, a lot of people don't know about it. And, like, a lot of people, you know, a lot of plays and theater work was created in the pandemic, and literally our offering was created by a group of people. Over 30 people were involved with our offering, and in the theater community, in, you know, like, my community from Houston, like, just everywhere, like, organizers and, you know, just, like, kids made this thing that we wanted to see. But I feel like our offering was maybe, you know, ahead of its time, because, like, people don't talk about it. You know what I mean? And, like, we can talk about, like, oh, was it good or was it bad? Which I don't think it was bad. Like, it wasn't bad. Like, objectively, it wasn't bad. But I bring that up to say, like, you know, well, maybe people, you know, if the rebuttal was, like, well, maybe people don't talk about it because it was bad, but it wasn't. But what I'm saying is, like, this was a special thing that, like, we all got together and did, and everybody was a part of, and we centered those who needed to be centered, you know, from now moving forward, and kind of showed theater, like, what we wanted it to be. But because we didn't have producers on our side, like, certain things, and we can talk about the things in the pandemic that had producers on their side and that had, you know, white people wanting to spend money, specifically Ratatouille, you know what I mean? Like, if we're going to talk about it, like, we had these, and there are other projects, you know, and we had, and if I sound bitter, then I sound bitter, but, like, you know, we had projects that had funding, and, you know, and, you know, I'm not going to say that Arvin didn't have funding, because we did, and we do have people interested, and there are, you know, producers interested, you know, but it's just very difficult, you know, to be a marginalized creator and to be a Black trans woman trying to make way for herself in an industry where people don't get you and people don't understand. And then you have, you know, you have white people who don't understand. And then you have people in your communities who don't understand what you're trying to do. And you just kind of have to forge this path for yourself and just live in this world of, I'm just gonna blaze this shit, you know? And I think that's for me. So I think it's hard. I think both are very hard, because it's either be a part of the institution and the machine or not. And I think that people try to get to that answer really easily. And I'm glad that I have had the life experience that I do, especially from these past 4 years, because I've learned so much. Like, cis in 2020 is not the same cis, you know, that I am now. And that's what life is about. It's like growing and learning. And I think that I have learned so much about that. And, you know, so I can't really say right now what I prefer. I don't want to be a part of the machine. I know that. I think after Oklahoma, I've learned a lot about the future. And I think that for me to be a part of a conglomerate like this in a show, in a professional production, Broadway or otherwise, it would take a lot for me to do it. And it would also take a lot for, it would have to be something very special, like Legally Blonde. And like Legally Blonde is something I want to create myself, and I want to revive that shit myself. So, like, you know, I just don't want to do anything else unless I have a producing credit on it, and like a real producing credit. So
yeah, and I wish everyone could have seen our faces. I was gonna say Hera and I were both like, yes, give us this Legally Blonde, we'll come back to that.
So do you want to explain more about what our offering is, like what the project was and how people could still interact with it now?
Yeah, so our offering was I forget what we called it, but it was really special, like what we called it, but it was definitely a product of its time. So to tell y'all the story of our offering and how it like came to be is, during the pandemic, I am a like director at heart. Like I love directing. Like I wouldn't say I'm a director first because I do love performing, but like I am a director. Like, and so I hadn't done it, been able to do it in a while because of, one, the pandemic, but also just, like, once I left college, I had to kind of focus on performing and get my name out there and stuff. So, I was like, I want to direct this, like, virtual production of Our Town. Because, like, when I was in high school, Our Town was this very special show to me that I never got to do because my dad was a terrible person, is a terrible person, and I never got to do it, but I got cast as stage manager, all this, couldn't perform the role. And so I wanted to do Our Town, and I was like, I know the people that I want to do it, and I want to do this, like, big community production online and get, like, people from Broadway and get people in my community and, like, people I went to college with and, like, make this big-ass conglomerate production. Like, and I'm big about aligning people with their dreams and aligning people with, like connection and community. And, like, that's what Open House Project is about specifically. But, like, yeah, we'll talk about that later. But I wanted to do this thing. And so I went to go talk about getting the rights to do it and just, like, clearing, making sure everything was clear on the back end so that I couldn't get in trouble. And, like, the estate, Thurman Wilder's estate, was like, no, we don't want any virtual productions of this show to happen. And, like, that was such a testament of, like, the time and just, like, theater generally, just, like, how gatekept it is. And just, like, you can't even just, like, put on a fucking play that a man wrote 60 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, like, there are so many, like, blockades in the way of people like me creating. And so once again, when people say, you know, just create your own work, like, bitch, what the fuck? Like you don't know what the fuck you're saying, you know? But long story short, we couldn't do it. And I was like, hell no. Like, I've never been one to take no for an answer. So I was like, no, I'm not taking that. And so I put out a tweet and was like, who want to write a play? And I just talked to a lot of people I knew and was like, let's do this. And we were like, we want to make a response to Our Town and, like, talk about everything that Our Town as a play made us feel in the way of a theater kit, not, like, in the way of, like, a human, because as a human, I can look at Our Town and be like, bitch. But, like, as a theater kid and somebody who likes the work and likes stories like that, you know, I wanted to have a show inspired by it. And so we did it. And so our offering was this product of its time project that was this virtual theater experience that we created in the pandemic. And we put it out on, we did it live on YouTube, and we filmed it, like, over, like, the course of, like, July, and it came out August 23rd on Sunday, and I'll never forget that day, and that was, like, my Broadway debut. Like, I felt like I had created this play and, you know, put it out into the world, and, like, that was, I'll never again, well, maybe again, but, like, nothing in the world can compare to that feeling, and, like, that is what I felt like I had worked my whole life for. You know, to create this thing with people that I love and put it out into the world, this beautiful thing. And so I hope that answered what it was, but it was this play, and it's on YouTube. You can go watch it. And I really am proud of it.
And we'll make sure we have the link so people can go watch it and keep the conversation going. Just mm-hmm. like you said, you know, we want people to keep talking about it and mm-hmm. knowing that it's out there. And you've already touched on this quite a bit, but we wanted to circle back to something that you've said. I think it's on your website. You describe yourself as an artist, activist, and self-proclaimed sister to the people. So how do you see these aspects of yourself feeding your growth as an artist, whether that's directing, acting, all the different aspects of your art?
I think that, like, for me, and this is kind of really what Oklahoma helped me, like, figure out, and I don't know if people are gonna like this, and oh well, like, and I even have guilt sometimes feeling this, but, like, I am an entertainer down. Like, if you've been to one of my concerts, if you went to 25 or been to Cisgender, like, I like the room, and I like the space, and I like to be in the mix, and I like how it feels when people are with you on your journey and entertained by you. And so I think, like, that as a performer, that's always number one. Like, that is going to be my why with taking jobs. You know what I mean? And I think with Oklahoma, it's been very difficult to navigate that because the show is so such art. And there's ways, you know, to do it. And I'm thankful that I am playing 8020 because I have more than more other people in the show to be able to, you know, to be the performer. And there's just so much. I just have so much to learn. Generally about, like, theater and performance and the work, you know, and you can't do that with one contract. But so I say that to say, like, right now, like, I have so much to learn, but also what I've navigated right now in this moment is, like, I love to perform and I like the freedom of that. And so I think that that's where the artist activist sits to the people, not the performance part, but, like, the part about, like, connecting and engaging with people on a, like, mutual level, that's where all of that lives. And that's what being a sister to the people is. And that's what being the advocate and the activist lives. And that's what being, you know, the artist lives. Like, I want my art to connect. And so as a director specifically, one of my main themes of direction is relatability. Because that's what, I want you to be able to relate to something. So, like, the way I set up, if I have to direct a living room scene, the way I execute the blocking of the living room, the way I set the living room, you know, what is in the kitchen, what is sitting there, like, what are the props, things like that are all going to be reminiscent of how I view it. So you might get some That's All Raven, you might get some Hannah Montana, you might get some The Parkers. Like, there's a lot of everything that feels me as an artist will be executed in my work, you know? And so I think that it's all just about relatability and engagement and entertainment. And I think that the advocacy and the activist part is just, like, I want niggas to do right. And I want shit to be what it needs to be for people like me to be in the room. Because the room works for white people. And majority, and the crazy part about it is majority of the times it doesn't work for white people. But white people are not going to stand up and say that it doesn't work for them. So, and I'm not going to advocate more than for myself than for white folks. But, you know, I'm not going to be okay with just whatever. And I'm not going to be okay with the okie doke. And I don't think that because I'm young in the industry, I have to endure harm and trauma to get to the golden statue or the golden prize. And I'm not interested in playing anybody's game. I'm going to win because I'm a winner, you know. And I think that this industry just has really has it fucked up, just, like, where it comes from and, you know, egos and all of that. And I think it's just, like, allow people to be special. Everybody is, like, just allow that. But, you know, everybody wants to feel on top. And it seems for a lot of people, the only way to do that is being on top of somebody else, and that's just not true. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, that's where my advocacy, and not just in the entertainment industry, but just in life, it's like, I want shit to be right. And if I get a whiff that something is wrong, then I'm going to speak up. And that's just who I am as a human being, and that's who I am as a person. And, you know, it's second in my artistry advocacy, but it's first as me. And I've always been like that. And, you know, this time has been difficult. And just, like, being, you know, an advocate and an activist, like, in the theater space more specifically, and then going to do this show within in the industry has been difficult, you know. And, like, my fear was that, like, I didn't ever want people to feel like, oh, like, sis gave up, you know, or you know, it was performance, it was performative, or it was this, it was that, you know. And it's just difficult. It's difficult. So, yeah. I hope that I accept that.
Yeah, and we're a little over a year out from the Trans March on Broadway mm-hmm. that you organized mm-hmm. last year. And so in that vein, what lasting impacts have you seen for the industry? Or yeah.
There aren't a lot. There aren't a lot. But there are more than we could count before. Of specifically Black trans femmes, specifically trans folks, specifically people that look like me in the industry now. Not in the industry now, sorry, but performing currently. And I'm not going to take credit for anything, but I'm going to say that I was a part of doing the work. And a lot at that time, there was a lot of people specifically in my community who looked down on me and basically were like, you know, what do you think you're doing? Like, you don't, you like, who are you? You don't, you know what I mean? And it was kind of very much like, girl, bye. You know what I mean? But now I see the fruits of the labor and I'm like, huh, now who was walking down Times Square with the loudspeaker talking about put trans people on Broadway? You know what I mean? And like, I'm not, you know, it's a hard thing because I also am just like, I don't ever want to be a mean girl. I don't ever want to be a nasty girl. That's not my brand. I want to be a sister to the people, and that's a sister to everybody. But bitches, try it. But I think I've put in a lot of work, and I put in a lot of hard work in my advocacy. And I think that it's coming to fruition. And I think we're seeing it in a lot of ways. And not taking credit for anybody's journey at all. I'm just saying that, like, I was in the streets. You know what I mean? And when people were doubting it and when people were not interested. And I also carried my message through. Through this whole contract, through this whole, you know, year, I haven't stopped. And so, you know, I think that for me, that's been the most beautiful part, is to see these people thriving in this industry and seeing me thrive in this industry. Because also, a month after, I was doing Oklahoma. You know what I mean? And mind you, like, I knew about Oklahoma a month before the Trans March on Broadway. But like, you know, it works. And people, you know, say that stuff like that doesn't work. And it did. March on Broadway, Trans March on Broadway, the whole conversation of the world, a lot of it worked. People don't give a fuck anymore. So we're seeing a comeback of bullshit, but it worked. And so I think, like, that's been my, you know, biggest thing. I think another thing is just, like, the hardest thing for me to watch is, like, people not caring, and people that I, like, watched their faces while I was speaking at these marches, and people who showed up to these marches and protests, seeing them fall back and go back on what they promised and going back on what they stood for at a time. I think that's the most, I'll say, hurtful. It's definitely a slap in the face. You know what I mean? It's like, it's definitely like you could have fooled me, you know, and now I know better. I know that, like, my my future and the future of people I love and respect and want to see on top does not rely on somebody's integrity because people have none. So, you know, I've just grown in that way. And I've also grown in a way of like, and I shouldn't say this.
We can always edit it out later.
So let me grow. But, you know, but now after the experiences I've had and the experience in this industry, I'm like, maybe trans people don't need to be here. Maybe black people don't need to be here. You know what I mean? Like, because
that's real.
You know what I mean? What's the point if it's just gonna be harm? Like, maybe we're good, you know? And I think it's also based on the person, right? Like, this is not, we can't just like put identities, but like, you know, I think that it's like, it depends on what you want. And that's what I've learned is like, as a black trans woman myself, like being in the entertainment industry, in specifically the theater industry, because they're all different. What is my why for being here? And what is the point and the purpose? And, you know, it's hard with Oklahoma, especially like, I feel like, I think my biggest thing with Oklahoma, and maybe this is me being too young, and this is me being too, like, trying to get or want something before it has time to sit, is, like, when we say, like, you know, cis is one of the first openly black trans women to have a lead on a national tour, and lead a national tour in this way, what does that mean? And, like, yes, we can say it in all the multitudes in which we can say it, but like, what does that mean for her as a person, right? And like, take away the identity in the way of like, cis being a black trans woman, but this is the first time in the history of theater where we are seeing this success in this way, and we are seeing stories being told in this way. And it's just like, I want my shit for it, you know? And not to a part where I'm like, maybe I'm too young to see it right now, but it's just like, you know, that was a struggle. That wasn't like, you know, I wasn't just given this role. Like, I am actually a really good Ada Wanny. Like, Ada Wanny is me, and so that's why I'm playing the role. And so I think in our ways of seeing, like, all these, like, black trans women and, like, trans people specifically get cast, or, like, black people get cast and stuff, you know, we have to remember that, like, for example, Emily in Phantom, like, no, Emily is like Christine Daae to a T in the way of, like, she is the best bitch for the role. And she happens to be this dark-skinned black woman. Sorry, not to call her a bitch. Sorry, I need to be, just like, you know. But, like, she is a dark-skinned black woman, and that's beautiful, but, in addition to, she is amazing and stellar in the role. And so we have to remember the talent, and we have to remember the work that it had to be to be the first. And I don't think we do that. And especially in my case, like, I feel like it's just been trans-centered in the sense of like, oh yeah, Sis and Hennessy on the Oklahoma National Tour. Sure. But like, remember that when you, but be mindful of that, you know? And I think a lot of the times when I do interviews for Oklahoma, there's a lot of frustration that gets caused within me, because they'll ask me like, how is it with Hennessy? And I'm like, what are you asking me? Like, what do you want to know? Because you're asking this black trans woman what her connection to this white trans man is. And at the end of the day, you're trying to other me more than I'm othering myself, because imagine asking a black woman what it's like in the workspace with a white man. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, not to say Hennessy is a problem or anything, but I'm just saying like, you know, so
that's not the conversation. Yeah.
Right. That's not the conversation we need to be highlighting. You know what I mean? And I understand why people do it, but then it's like my success and my, what is that word? My success and my like journey gets conflated to transness, because there's another person here who happens to be white who you can talk about being trans about. And I'm like, that's not what I want to talk about. That's not what I'm interested in, because especially not this angle. Talk about my journey of like, if you want to talk about my trans journey of, not my trans journey, but like the parts that has to do with me being trans getting here, you know, because that is important to the story, then let's talk about that. But don't conflate it. because this is mm-hmm. two different things are happening. Trans men have existed, you know, in this industry in a different way. And I want to be very mindful of not like conflating like experiences, because there's a lot that a visibility that is very difficult for trans men to, you know, to have, you mm-hmm. know, and it's just different. So I don't want to speak on anybody's experience, but what I'm talking about specifically is just like, don't conflate my experience as a black trans woman to a white trans man. And don't conflate my experience here in that way either. But because the world is so, and this is what we're talking about, you know, before we started recording, because the world is so interested in exploiting trans folks right now, and getting those stories, that's what's happening. And so, you know, it's a great time to be alive, but it's also a very difficult time. And so I think, like, I don't even remember the question, child. What are we talking about? Like how did
you're
I get
answering
here?
It.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
We were talking about the lasting impact of the trans march on Broadway and the industry, which I think this definitely
okay.
pertains to.
You. Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I was just going to say, in order to finish it up, it is, I think that, like, what I was advocating for, but we have to be mindful of the ass. I was advocating for allowing trans people to exist in these spaces. So that means welcoming into these spaces, providing them with the resources to exist in these spaces, and allowing them to just be in these spaces. And that ask is not what came to fruition. And I'm not speaking for all trans folks. I'm speaking for myself. And so now how do I figure out how to do that as a trans creator, as a trans artist, as a human, because also you have to be mindful that, like, yes, the trans stuff is right here, but I'm still worried about being black in America. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so those go hand in hand for me. And so everything exists, you know, at once in that way. I'm so worried about being plus size. I'm so worried about being dark skin. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot that I have to, you know, navigate there. And so now I have to figure out, because I feel like it is my work to do that, you know, how to do that, and also how to keep my mission, you know, and then as a performer, how to continue that as, and be an artist and advocate. Because when you're a performer, you're in a space where people aren't trying to have you advocate all the damn time. You know what I mean? Because there's, you know, work to do, but, and that's in air quotes, but, like, you know, it's got to be right. And so, you know, I think that, like I said it, you know, I'm seeing a lot of the work and the advocacy of me specifically come to fruition, and I'm happy with that. But now, you know, we have to supplement it with making sure that if trans people are going to be in these rooms and black folks are going to be in these rooms, they're safe, and they're not right now.
Yeah.
And so we did this big diversity push and haul, and now we're unsafe. And so now it's just like, wait, what was the point of us being here if we were just going to get harmed? I was better off broke at home.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who would like to thank you for all the advocacy and the work and being in the streets that you've done to get us to the point where people are more in the rooms more. And hopefully, you know, others can really step up to help make it safer.
People have. Yeah, I, you know, it's just hard. People have, but, you know, it's always the negativity that's the loudest, you know, and sometimes you respond to that before you respond to the people who see you, and that's,
sure,
you know, you forget that.
Yeah, I feel like that's human nature.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So in line with your advocacy work, because you're doing so much, and you're also the founder of the organization, The Next Generation, can you tell us about the mission of what you're doing and what kind of work you're doing?
Yeah, the Next Generation Project was another, you know, product of its time. It's an organization that was created to provide mental health and self-care resources to Black and Brown trans folks. And, you know, in the time of doing that, you know, our biggest fundraising push that we had were the Black Lives, Black Trans Lives Matter shirts. And that was, we had a big push for that. And that was our main, like, you know, way of getting incoming donations. And, you know, a lot of people were interested in advocacy at that time. So a lot of people were donating. And so that's one thing that has been very hard for me to, like, keep up, because we don't have a lot of funds to pay people. So, like, a lot of the organizations right now, that's, you know, how they are running, is because they either have fiscal sponsors and, you know, they are able to pay staff and stuff like that. But I don't. It's just me and a couple of my friends who disperse money and give out money and, you know, things like this. And it's like, we have to, like, be mindful of where our time lies, especially with, you know, things, you know, of those people, my friends and people who are helping, you know, they have work and they have, you know, things that they have to get done. And so Next Generation Project is, this tour ends in October, and my main goal is to get that back on its feet, you know, and because another organization I started was Open House Project, to create accessibility for theater, and theater makers. And so I've kind of been trying to, you know, just navigate both of them. And my mission is still strong with Next Generation Project, but we're just trying to figure out ways to, you know, get more money, because we don't want to give out all our money and then we can't, there's nothing we can do, you know, anymore. So we're trying to figure out how to, you know, keep the, there's just a lot of, like, logistics, sure, you know? So, you know, if that Next Generation has been on, you know, pause right now because we need help. We need, you know, people who have, you know, the time to sit and really, you know, do it. And we need more opportunities to raise funds and more opportunities to, you know, exist as a organization in the way that we want to. So that's what Next Generation Project is.
We were planning to shout out Next Generation for our Queer Gives, where we asked the listeners to donate. So how could folks donate and support Next Generation?
If you go to our website, wearetng.org, there should be a donation page and everything is there. So, yeah.
Great. We will link to it so people have that information. Mm-hmm. And keep us posted. We'll let folks know as new things are happening. And also looking ahead to the future, you have your own series coming out soon on Broadstream. Mm-hmm. We would love to hear more about that and also any other projects you would like to share or are allowed to share.
Yeah. I mean, so right now, so this is, y'all can't speak about it to anyone, but, so yes, Living for Sis is coming out, November 1st. It should be coming out November 1st. These dates won't matter if it's after the fact, but Living for Sis is coming out very soon. if it's not out already, and very excited about that. And then, I recently filmed an episode of American Horror Story season 11, which I'm very excited about. So I'm very excited about that. You know, the tour is coming to an end.
I love American Horror Story.
Yeah. This season is great. The season is going to be great. I'm really excited for it. And there's just, you know, a lot of stuff on the horizon. So I'm really excited to just continue to do the work and continue to do all the things we want to do.
Incredible. Thank you. I want to jump to our final sections, what we do with every guest. The first one is called Queering the Canon, which you've kind of already answered. What is another existing musical character you would like to perform as? And I know Elle Woods is a big one. Is there another one out there that you have a dream about?
I always say this, but I really would love to do the Lion in the Wiz. I would love to play the Lion in the Wiz.
Wait, there hasn't been a, I'm trying to think, when was the last time the Wiz was, like, done?
The last time the Wiz was done was, like, the Wiz Live, and then there was a production, at Tuts, and I know about Tuts because I'm from Houston, but, Allison Daniel, who is in 1776 right now on Broadway. She played the Lion in The Wiz at Tuts. Cool. And but yeah, and it's interesting just the idea of, you know, my lion, because I think and that's the thing too, is like it's really trying to figure out. And I'm allowing myself to do this much more of just like, I trained in musical theater. I trained to be a storyteller and I want to just do it. And like being the lion, if I were to play the lion, that's when I think the, like, if we had to put a label on it, that's where the gender nonconformity and that, you know, everything would come out, because like, I would just want to be the lion. You know what I mean? And what that means. And so like, there's going to be a lot of aspects about me that like, would exist and that I would be happy to. And I think that's the thing also, is like putting, you know, people with diverse gender identities in these experiences is like, that's the cool part of storytelling, is we get to see how people navigate this stuff and all utilizing all the tools that they have available to them. So I would love to play the lion and showcase that.
I don't know. I think I'm still, like, I'm excited for both of those, but I feel like the Legally Blonde needs to happen, like, urgently.
I know.
Like, someone needs to do that very soon.
I know.
So, thanks for putting that out there. Mm-hmm. So our next question is for our queer culture recs. So outside of theater, what is your queer culture indulgence? This could be a book, a TV show, a movie, an event you've been to. Doesn't even have to be queer to everyone. It could just be queer to you. What would you like to recommend? I also have a question that kind of goes along with this. But go ahead. I feel like you have something to say.
I don't know.
I wanted to ask you if and how you think Hannah Montana is queer.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Okay, that was everything I needed. I literally was about to say Hannah Montana.
I need to know this from you.
Okay, but wait. So I literally was about to say, to answer that question, I was like looking crazy. It was like, I'm Hannah Montana. Like, that is the answer to that question. But wait, what was your question? Well, I just heard Hannah Montana and freak. What was, that is nuts. That is fucking nuts. Do you follow me on Twitter?
No, you just mentioned it earlier and I was like, we need to come back to Hannah Montana.
Okay, because I talk about this a lot, but okay,
although
wait.
I do follow you on Twitter.
Okay, well, okay, what is your question?
Well, I just want to know if you think it's queer. Sounds like yes. And how do you think it's like a queer culture indulgence?
I don't. Okay, let me. And I think this is why that conversation was difficult. And people might be like, "Bitch, what does queer mean?" Like I am just like the I really am like I'm working on myself. I'm trying to figure this out. But I don't know. To me, you know, like, things are things, you know what I mean? And so, I think for me, speaking for myself about Hannah Montana is like, and the way, Hannah Montana, I think is one of the most perfect television shows to ever exist. I think, like, you know, there is That's So Raven, and it is a perfect TV show, but they sit on a fine line for me, and this is why they are at top one, and they teeter-totter at top one. Hannah Montana as a plot, as a script, as a thing, is such a perfect example of just like, wow. They took this little girl, they took this little white girl, and they said, you are a star. You are Hannah Montana. You are the biggest teen pop sensation in the world. And so guess what the fuck happened? She became that. And I think that with Hannah Montana, if we're talking about it in a way of transness, for me, when I looked at Hannah Montana, it was this teen by day, pop star by night. And it had nothing to do with transness or gender, but just like, you had to exist as this one thing while being Hannah Montana. Like, you had, like, you, Miley Cyrus, like, and I, like, I can say it better, but like, it was, for me, it just really changed my life, because like, other than the femininity and the aspect that I related to her on a gender basis, but just like the fact that like, we all have so many facets of ourselves that like, can manifest and showcase in a multitude of ways, if given the opportunity to. And like, just like Elle Woods, it's like this little white girl was given the opportunity to be both a regular small town girl from Tennessee, but also the biggest teen pop sensation in the world. And like, crazy. It's just crazy. And like, I wish I had the better words to equivocate exactly what I'm trying to say, but I think for me, like, that just changed me. And it gave me access and the ability to be like, you can be both. You can be all of these things. Like you can exist any way you want to be. And, you know, go for it.
You can have the best of both worlds.
That's what I was getting to. You can have the best of both worlds. And who said, like, you know, I can't be Superman. I said, like, so when you, I think like giving a child that and like, you know, laying that foundation and that path for a child is like, you can be cis, bitch. And like, that's what happened. And so I think Hannah Montana is a special piece of, you know, media for me. And so that's what I would, you know, recommend. Watch Hannah Montana. Because it's just crazy. It's just really nuts how, you know, it happened. And there's always a story that I love from Hannah Montana is that there, when they were filming the pilot, Disney and like Disney Channel, the offices, they were like, hey, we're going to film this like pilot, like bring your kids and we're going to make posters and give y'all posters and stuff like that. And y'all just got to go crazy while we film. And like, and like, it was fake. Like, it was like these couple of songs that they filmed for the TV show, you know, for the whole season one. And nobody knew who this little girl was. It was just like Miley Cyrus being Hannah Montana with this wig on, doing this choreo at this concert. And they had all these kids from, you know, people who Disney Channel, like Disney Channel families and stuff like that, who worked for Disney Channel, just brought their kids and they filmed this TV show. And like, literally, this girl became famous as fuck for being Hannah Montana. And like,
yeah,
it's crazy, you know, and I think this is very beautiful. And so that is, you know, that is something that is such a big part of who I am today and my transition and just like the way I look at life. So yeah, you can be anything.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I need to like go back and rewatch it now after hearing like your take on it. I feel like I appreciate it a lot more now.
So. Yeah, I think I've only seen one or two episodes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and watch the whole thing.
And when you watch it, think about it like this too. So Miley Stewart as the character had two people that kept her. It was Hannah Montana and it was Lily. And if you think about it, the show is about Lily. The show, if you watch it from beginning to end and even watch the movie, the show is about Lily's experience of this happening and like her acceptance of this person being her best friend. And that's why like True Friend is important. One in a Million is important. Like, it just like, if you have to look at it, like they were really, I don't know if anything was intentional, but like when you look at the show, like I want to do a case study one day in Hannah Montana, but like if you look at it from beginning to end, it was about Lily. Like the first episode is about Lily finding out she's Hannah, and the second episode, the last episode is about Miley having to figure out if she's going to choose Hannah over Lily, and she chooses Lily by going to Harvard. And like, it's like nuts.
That's so great. I'm really excited to watch it now.
It's like, well thought out.
Because Lily is her real life. Lily is her, like, Lily is, like, just life. And so, just like the show, which is, like, the main thing is, like, is she gonna pick being, you know, Hannah Montana, the teen pop sensation, or just a girl? And, like, Lily is the connection to that, and Hannah is the pop sensation, and that's what the whole movie is about. It's just like, I love it, I love it. And we must go. We must end this call. But, yes.
No, it's so good. I'm going to handpick episodes and make Carol watch them.
Okay, so. Okay. You must watch the episode where Robbie Ray gets hurt. You must watch that one, where she tries to go to Florida without him, because Michaela, who's played by Selena Gomez, is performing at the One World Foundation thing.
Also the Jonas Brothers episodes.
Oh my God.
It also sounds super queer that Hannah chooses a girl at the end too over her like stardom. So that totally pings my queerdar for me.
But mind you, she literally like makes out with a boy right before she chooses Lily at the airport. So just wanted to, but you know, bisexual queen.
Poly bisexual, I think it's there. So finally, sis, how can our listeners follow you on social media and on the internet?
You can follow me at You Can Call Me Sis with a U, not a Y-O-U, on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok and Venmo. Excuse me. And, you know, just hang out. There's a lot of sis, you know, content about to come. Sis World Takeover, as my good girl Rachel Zegler loves to say. And it's happening.
We're ready for it.
Thank you so much for being here. This was so much fun.
And good luck with the rest of the tour. And we'll see you soon.
Thank you. I'll talk to y'all later.
Thanks for listening. If you like, please rate and review us and share us with your friends.
So excited to hear your queer culture recommendations or any of your ideas on how we could queer the canon. You can call us, yes, actually call us, and leave us a voicemail at 845-445-9251 or send us an email at thesisonjoan@gmail.com.
Until next time, keep it queer.
Not that it'd be that hard for y'all to do.
Megan, you said
I know. I was like, I know. I think we're on a little bit of a delay here.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. But I'm sure it looked awkward. Apologies.
No, it didn't look awkward. It was just like, yep.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.